When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I want to talk to you about rotoballer.com. If you guys know me by now, you've listened long enough, you know I have my written content for DFS and other season-long fantasy products over at rotoballer.com. And if you're still grinding along in the NFL streets, season-long playoffs, DFS for the NFL, don't wait any longer. Go to rotoballer.com, get the NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? Rotoballer's NFL Premium Pass includes lineup tools, projections, and DFS cheat sheets for all formats. Get access to exclusive articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chat rooms. I do the weekly DFS cash game values, even then this Saturday even, doing some extra previews for the week's DFS slates. Come check all that out and join in on the winning and take 50% off any premium pass, not just football. If you want basketball, baseball's coming up, all that good stuff. 50% off any premium pass. Use my promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off. So you get 60% off a premium pass. It's that simple. So get in, get ready, finish the NFL season in a strong, strong way with rotoballer.com, NFL Premium Pass. Already at 50% off now. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% off when you purchase. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 422. Going to talk some fantasy baseball, a little look back at 2021 with a look ahead to 2022. Talking with an NFBC veteran to help me do this. He had a monster 2021 season. If it wasn't for some Canadian named Phil Dussault, we'd probably be talking a lot more about this individual. You can find him on Twitter at @_guilds. Andrew, the Guilds, how are we doing, man?
Doing well, Bubba. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining me, man. I'm glad we can make it work. It's been fun following you and your success and your skill. Like, you're just very, very, very talented when it comes to the NFBC world of fantasy baseball, and it's going to be fun to pick your brain for a little bit as we, you know, we're not in the lulls of fantasy baseball season, but it's obviously not the high peaks of time, so it's good to strategize, see what went right, what went wrong, what we can improve for 2022. So I'd love to have a person like yourself that did so well in 2021. And in the past, obviously, to help get us ready for 2022. So real quick, just the brass tacks of it all, how well did you do in 2021? Because I know it was pretty darn good, but I don't have like the rough numbers in front of me. I don't need the cash numbers per se. I just need like how you finished.
So I had three main events. I won two of them. I came in like fifth in the other, but the overall, I finished ninth overall in the main on one of them. And then I did four OCs, which I won every single one of those. And then I finished fourth overall in one of those OCs. So yeah, fourth overall finish in the OC and the ninth overall in the main. So good. Yeah, I guess six out of the seven bigger leagues were big time. So yeah, it was a good year.
Nice. Do you do a lot of the DCs and stuff to get ready for draft season, or do you kind of focus on the OCs and the mains?
So the OC is more my bread and butter, to be honest with you. I've been playing in that since 2014. The mains, I've been doing those for maybe 3 years now, I think. This is my third year. But yeah, the OC is kind of where I specialize in. But the DCs, I'll do those for like main. main event prep with the 15 teamers. But I'm not, you know, I'll put in 3 or 4 DCs, if that, just to kind of get, you know, the player pool, just to get that knowledge and the 15 team feel versus a 12. But yeah, mostly it's, I'm an OC and a main event guy now. So
it's funny because you hear so many nowadays, it seems like, oh, it's all about the 15 teams. It's all about this and that. And it's, I'm kind of in your neck of the woods there. I prefer playing in these 12 team leagues. I'm not sure. I don't know exactly why I feel, I guess I like the idea of if you have to go to the waiver wire, there's options. I don't want to be like fishing for like this complete just crapshoot of what we have out there, which it does take a skill set. There's obviously a lot to that to do it, and it's doable. But I think there's something fun about still being able to pick up guys and have fun while you try to win money in fantasy baseball instead of like stress out about things. What is it that you see, like you said, the OCs are your bread and butter compared to the main events, 12 versus 15. What do you see that differentiates it, that kind of makes it more something that appeals to you?
I just think, yeah, like you said, there's more kind of leeway in a draft room and a 12 teamer. Mm-hmm. Like with the main event, 15 team leagues, if you don't draft like an actual winner at the draft table, you're going to have a tough time competing. Like you said, the replacement value is not there on the waiver wire. A few bad injuries, your season could be shot. I mean, there's just more flexibility in a 12 teamer. But not to say I do like the challenge of the main events and winning the draft at that draft table. Because, you know, when you walk out of there, I mean, at least I have a feeling whether or not, you know, you have a contender on your hands. But yeah, in a 15 teamer, you really need to draft that team at the draft. Whereas a 12 teamer, there's a lot more ways, there's a lot more avenues to success, whether it's the waiver wire or just the replacement value as a whole. I mean, it's night and day compared to the 15 teamers.
Yeah, I like that. I like that point. That's very true. Because you know, you do 15 team leagues, and it's so true. You'll be even in the middle of your draft going, crap. Like, this is not where I wanted to be. Like, I got to figure out a way to pull a rabbit out of my hat with these like last 10 picks to be comfortable come draft day. I mean, opening day. Whereas a 12 teamer, it's like, okay, I missed out on this position, but oh wait, there's so much more I can do. I can pivot. I can do things and still build something. And if not, the waiver wire, you'll have more flexibility to open up. Speaking of the waiver wire, it's always a running joke between like Jinstead and all these other guys, 12 team versus 15 teams. Like 15 is kind of, it's not always structured. You still look at bids and they're still crazy at times, but there's kind of more of a fluidity almost to a 15 team fab, where 12s are just off the rails, where you get some crazy numbers. And you say you do so many of these OCs and everything. How do you kind of navigate that, the fab minefield? Because there's, I know you have to experience it. I do, and others. You'll put in a bid in your league and you're like, that bid would have won in like 12 other leagues out of like the 15 or whatever. How did this not happen? Like, it's so frustrating. But how do you navigate that?
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to the 12 teamer fabs. How I approach it is I'm usually super aggressive on the waiver wire, so I don't care if I'm wasting money. If I want a guy, I'm fine overbidding. You know, I'm not one of these guys that needs to have the most efficient bid, and you see all the screenshots. Oh, I won the guy by $2. I don't mind winning a guy by 150. If that's, if I get my guy, I don't care. I just find it's easier to manage, you know, later on through the season where you're getting guys for $1 or $2. So early on, I don't mind being aggressive, getting a guy, because, you know, if you do get them early on, you get a whole full season, you know, production versus, you know, a guy in July or August, you're only getting a couple months out of. So I'm aggressive early on. And for the main bids, I agree. There's my first play in the main, I was bidding like way too aggressive because I was in that OC mindset.
Yeah.
It took a little bit of, you know, time to see, okay, these guys are pretty much fluctuating between, you know, $20 to $40 per player. And here in the first year, I'm just going balls to the wall, just emptying my wallet. So it takes some adjustment. There's definitely a difference between the OCs and the main event bidding. So I think now I have a good sense of both and where they balance out pretty much.
No, and that's so true. Cause the 15s, I'm very cautious bidding. It seems like I'm afraid to lose my money, I think, because of the replacement value options. Like if you're out of cash or even in bigger problems, where in the 12s, maybe that's why I have more fun with it. I do better because it's like, last year in one league, Joey Votto's out there. I'm like, I'm spending a bunch of money to get Joey Votto, or like things like that, where in other leagues, you know, you can kind of pick and choose where you want to make your battles type situation. So I like that. When you say you're being, you like to be aggressive, is it like a particular position you're more aggressive in, or is it just basically a team needs? I'm assuming it's team needs because everything's so different. But, you know, some people love to go early on those potential closers that, you know, 75% of them don't pan out type thing. So what do you you choose to do?
Yeah, it's not really dependent on any position for me. It's if I do feel like I missed out on closers early and I see one, like last year, it was Julian Merriweather.
Yep.
Which was a mistake, but I went super aggressive for him just because I saw, you know, the possibility he could be the Jays closer. It looked like they wanted to use him in the ninth. So I spent over 40% in the main leagues on him. And I'll never forget, I think he pitched one inning prior to getting hurt after I acquired him. So I essentially paid $400 out of my fab for one out. So that didn't work out, but yeah, that's not really dependent. Like Austin Riley was another guy. I bid like $234 early on, and the runner up was like $30, which, you know, I don't mind. You know, that was a 12 teamer also. But if I see a need for my team, I'm okay just bidding large, and I'll worry about, you know, the efficient bidding as we move along in the season.
Well, because even in 12 team leagues, as the season goes on, there's so many more $1 guys. So like you could fix that stuff. Makes more sense. Like you're saying, I'll go get my guy early and I'll figure it out later. Obviously you don't want to run out of money because you can't do the $0 bids, but if you play it smart towards the end, and by the end, unfortunately, some people have given up, you have other options. Like
that's the thing. There's, yeah. So like, there's like closers in July and August, I mean, you get them for like $1 on the wire.
Yep.
Just cause teams are already given up. They abandon their teams. You're competing with maybe 3 or 4 other teams versus 12. Right. Mm-hmm. In May. So obviously the prices go down. So it's pretty much relative. If I have, you know, under $200 in July, I'm fine with that. I'll make it work. You just want to have a little bit of something going into the final month, you know, $50-ish. And I don't go too thin. You know, I'm not like crazy where I have $6 on, you know, August 1st. But yeah, it's just about, you know, efficient bidding and being wise with the money. After, if you spend big and you miss, you just got to be a little more mindful of that as you move along in the season.
And I love the point on closers as the year goes on. It's something we've delved into a lot, me and Toby, on our shows and everything, because we do the recap in the weekly fab, and you could see it as the season went on. And that's, I mean, that's one reason why I'm more cautious early on with spending on saves. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I tell the story, it worked for me with Liam Hendricks a couple of years ago with the A's. It was freaking amazing. But then there's always the stories like the Mayweathers and stuff where it's like, yeah, well, that didn't go so well. But it you know, you never know. So that's the beauty of it. But there are so many that if you want to get guys, they'll get you 5 or 6 saves, you can for a buck later on. And those little bits go a long way. So that's like one of the categories where you can kind of wait on compared to like other categories potentially. I know everyone says you can find power and all these other things, which you can, just all depends. But I think the saves one, it's like the way the saves are going these days with so many committees and stuff, it might be an avenue towards working with your fab type situation. In the fab realm of things, 12 versus 15, we can compare that if you'd like. How easy is it to drop guys? Because that's one of the things so many of us have issues with, is when do we know when to drop guys? I know I've held them too long, or I've dropped them too early. I'll never ever forget, I've said it a million times on my show, the year Matt Carpenter went nuts, I dropped him before he went nuts, and I will never ever forget that. But those are the breaks. So when do you kind of feel comfortable dropping guys?
Yeah, I think just 12 teamers, much quicker leash or shorter leash. You're churning a lot more in 12 teamers, whereas the 15 teamers, I mean, you have to have a little more patience just because, you know, the waiver wire is so barren, you know, with any guys that are productive. So, you know, if you have a guy, you might want to wait a little bit if they're getting every day at bats. I mean, a guy that's getting every day at bats in a main event, I mean, it's gold just in itself getting those at bats. So you don't want to, you know, give up on a guy too soon. Ian Happ was kind of that guy last year in the mains where he went through like a disaster slump. I was like, yeah, he wasn't doing anything for a while, but yet he was still playing mostly every day. So that was a guy, you know, it was tough to just give up in a 15-teamer versus a 12-teamer. I mean, he was long gone on the wire. True. So Yeah, at bats, I think is the biggest difference between the mains and the 12 teamers, where playing time is so vital. Because you know, you don't want to be starting platoon guys, which a lot of times can happen in a 15 team league, where you're starting guys getting 3-4 games a week. You're just behind the eight ball. You know, there's somebody in your league that's going to have 5 outfielders playing every day. Yep. So
yeah, those at bats count.
Mindful of that. Yeah.
Even if it's like you said, even if it's, you know, one player playing 6 games compared to 4 games, but he goes 0-for-4 and 2-of-the-6, but those other 4, like, it's just the whole dynamic can be so much bigger, at least in counting stats and everything, which it's something that it's talked about more and more, which is nice to see. The at-bats, the playing time, how to project playing time is the mystery of all mysteries. Like, if you can figure that out, you're awesome, especially as, like, it's not even just closers now. We're seeing more and more teams platooning. I'm a Giants fan. Their team platoon, they're turning into the Rays out here. The Dodgers do it. It's making it more and more difficult to find those studs that just run type situation.
Yeah.
So that's always a fun predicament. When you're looking at your drafts, and like, we're jumping around the outline here, but but when you're looking at your drafts, we talked about, you know, the playing time. That's a thing. How cognizant are you to try to find players with multi-position eligibility compared to, like, is it just like, okay, if these guys are close, we're going this way, or is it something you kind of focus on? Because I know I might focus on it too much, but it's been such a chaotic last couple seasons where it's been huge in season. So how do you approach multi-position guys?
Yeah, I don't target them specifically. I do use it kind of like a tiebreaker if I'm between a couple of guys. And, like you had on here, Chris Bryant, who is it, versus
Bregman.
Bregman, yeah. And Bryant has the outfield eligibility. So to me, that would kind of move him past Bregman in that case. But I think sometimes people overvalue it too, also, because you don't want to be playing a guy who's not productive only because he has the multi-positions. And one guy that comes to mind is David Fletcher last year.
Yeah.
Who I had in a DC, in my DC, and I didn't realize how big of a slump this guy went through in the middle of the season. I don't know if you're aware, he was like 10 for like 140, and I absorbed like every one of those at-bats in my DC. Well, I had no healthy guys, but you got to be careful with, it's nice to have that flexibility, but you want guys that are productive with that flexibility, you know? Like LeMahieu is a different story. You're getting a guy that's productive at all these positions. So to me, that's a guy that it does create that more of that value with the extra positions. But I don't target those guys, but it's something that I'll use as more of a tiebreaker than anything.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that, like I said, I think I might overvalue at times, but it's just been such a weird couple of years. But I agree. Like, it's the whole idea, you know.
Yeah. So the cut lines that's where it's really, it comes into play. I mean, you're always trying to target those guys that can create those points in all these multiple positions. I mean, that format, I mean, that's gold there. But as far as your typical roto league, I mean, it's nice, you know, for injuries to plug in and get the at bats for the guy. But yeah, it's not something I'm, reaching for in drafts.
I'm with you there. What you did reach for in drafts last year was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That was your boy. And that was, can we say that was one of the reasons you were very successful last year?
It's definitely, and I still got to get the powder blue jersey.
Such a beautiful, they need to wear those more often. Absolutely beautiful.
It might be, I think it's my favorite jersey in baseball right now. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. But yeah, no, he was a main cog for sure. So he was my highest owned player across like every format. OCs, main, DCs, I think I had something like 40% Vlad across all my leagues. So yeah, nice. he was just a monster.
how aggressive were you in drafts? Because we know his price tag was creeping up, but like, were you going like mid first round, late first round? What were you going with him?
So in the OCs, he was very undervalued early on. I mean, he was going like in the fifth round of OCs, so I was more than happy jumping him around there. And as we got towards like the main drafts, he kind of, you know, he was elevated to like the third and maybe early third. So his price tag definitely went up in the mains, but I was always willing to take him at least a round higher than his ADP, especially in the OCs. That's why I had mostly him and even in the mains. There's actually a funny story. So I had him in two of the three mains, and the other main I'm sitting there in a mid-third round. So this is around pick 37, 38-ish. And Bellinger is still on board, which was, this was like 10 to 12 picks past his ADP. So the owner right before me, he's seen that he needed a first baseman. So I'm like, all right, he's taking Bellinger. I'm just going to go Vlad across the board. You know, I was just excited to click Vlad, just assuming Bellinger has gone right before me. And he takes Vlad before Bellinger. So I'm like, wow. Because, I mean, at that time, nobody was taking Bellinger, you know, after Vlad. I mean, it was always
way earlier.
Yeah. At least 10, 12 picks before Vlad. So, yeah. So I'm like, all right, I guess I got to go Belly here. And then we know how that worked out.
Yeah.
So that was the main that didn't win. But again, it's not only due to Vlad. There's, you know, I saw that thought or somebody commented saying it was only due to Vlad my season. I mean, there was a bunch of guys I was on that I hit on. Yeah. So Vlad just happened to be the number one guy. Yeah. For me,
No, baseball's such a long season. It's not never one guy is going to win your season. That's for darn sure. But
yeah, I saw that. I'm like, you know, you're having rosters. No. There's 23 man rosters. You know,
yeah.
Pitchers, closer. I mean,
yeah, there's five pitching categories and five hitting categories.
Yeah, there's never one guy. I could show you hundreds of teams with Vlad that did nothing last year.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's like the people tweeting out right now for fantasy football. Who drafted Cooper Kupp and didn't make the playoffs? It's impossible. I was like, it's probably not likely, but I guarantee you there's some that missed the playoffs. I guarantee you.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's you have to still build a team. That's the point of this game. It's not just, you know, a one-off situation, home run derby type deal. But it helps you. It definitely helps you. And the reason I ask is because you went, like you said, 40% of your team. So you're focused on getting Vlad, which is good. It's like we hear about some of these really like longtime veteran Hall of Fame NFBC guys. Like they just walk in a room and they have a list of guys. Like, I'm not going to care. I have my guys. This is what I'm picking from. And I've been trying to get myself to be more diligent in that and not just be like, hey, wow, this guy's falling. I got to like, he's three rounds later now. Like, this is crazy. But I didn't like him, so why would I like him three rounds later scenario? That's the tough part. But do you go in with like just a list of, hey, like obviously you wanted Vlad last year. Is there always a list of a few guys like, I want these guys on my team?
Yep. So there is. So, you know, I'll do a lot of research and I'll use ADP kind of just to see what the, you know, consensus is thinking of where players should be going in and where they're valuing these guys. And if I see, you know, a difference in the value of a guy that I really like that the public might perceive differently, those are the guys I like to target. So I do try to key in on, you know, a few guys every year. And usually it's not guys going as high as Vlad. It's more in the middle rounds where I'm okay drafting a lot of these guys across all of my teams. Because if you miss, you know, it's a 10th, 11th, 12th round pick, you know, that's not going to hurt you too bad. So Vlad was kind of the rare exception last year where I just had a really strong conviction on him and decided to just pretty much go all in. Yeah. So it worked. I mean, but yeah, generally it's more guys in the middle rounds that I see. Maybe it's an inefficiency in the marketplace. And those are the guys I kind of key on. And I'm happy even jumping them a little bit in ADP just so I can secure them in those drafts. But yeah. So I do go in there with a few guys that I like to acquire. And even if you see my teams, not just Vlad, you'll see, you know, a few guys across all teams that are, you know, same player. So something I've done and it's worked.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, and I like the point you made because most of mine are like around like pick 150 to 2-something, give or take. Like it's deeper in drafts. And it's like, okay, I got it. Marcus Stroman in almost every league last year. I'm like, he's going to like pick 2 to 220. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like, I know he's not like a massive elite guy. Like the price tag was just silly for what we were getting there. And he's bumped up a ton already this year. So, and I still like
last year. Yeah. On the mains actually was Class A.
Yeah.
So if you remember, right, there was a lot of vagueness as to who the closer was in Cleveland, right? We had Karinchak, we had Whitgren, Class A. Nobody really had a good handle on who was closing. Yep. You know, a lot of people thought it would be Karinchak. Nobody really knew. But Class A was going like way, way too late. I mean, I was getting him in the rounds 22, 23. So essentially, I just drafted him in every one of those mains.
Yep.
And, you know, he turned into a monster. And then, I mean, you got to hit on one of those guys late. And then it's easy to say that, but
Yeah.
To me, he's the cheapest guy of the three. So why would I pay up for a Karinchak when I know
100%.
Massé has just as good a chance 10 rounds later, 12 rounds later to secure that job?
And like you said, it's better to kind of go with those late guys as kind of your all-in guys because it's not a big pick. So if you have to drop them, you can drop them. It's not going to crush you. Yeah. If you go all in on, say you go all in on like Tyler O'Neill this year and he does not continue on this stretch, you're paying a second to third round price. That's going to crush. Like, it's not going to lose your league. You can bounce back. It's going to crush you, though. It's going to take a lot of work to come back from that.
And see, that kind of, yeah. So my strategy, too, a lot is, like you mentioned, Tyler, I had a lot of O'Neill last year, too. But I like going for the guys with the press values that had proven success in the league, right?
Yep.
So I want the guys that are going cheaper, but I know have that boom, that spike season in them, like a Bellinger. How, yeah, you know, people are so down on this year. It's like
pick 100 right now. Yeah.
I mean, he's young. You know, he was messing with his swing. He had the injuries. Would it surprise people that much if he goes back to his MVP caliber year two seasons ago? I mean, and you're getting that guy so late. That's the kind of guy that I'm going to be jumping around, not just waiting to, you know, to target him.
Well, that's such a great point because it's like so many people, early draft picks, it's your pain. Not all of them. Some guys are proven. But most of them, you're paying a bump in price because they had a career season. Yeah, so it's like regression's natural. To continue having a career season every year is tough. So you already got to predict. Like, I still think Tyler O'Neill will be good, but is he second or third round good? Is the question. Like, there's discussion there. But yeah, like you mentioned Bellinger, Yelich going around the same area. I'm probably more comfortable with Bellinger than Yelich, but same theory. Like, you got these guys that can produce. We've seen it. Can they do it again? Altuve is going super late. I know he's getting older, but he's still super productive. Like, there's a lot of guys like that where if that's the whole point of these early drafts, like you say, you do some DCs and stuff, is to see where this is going. And you're just like, okay, I can kind of pivot now. I can do different things to make it work, which will be quite kind of fun. You mentioned Clase, and in this ever evolving world of closers that are going crazy, are you aggressive early? Are you just a wait and get Clase types and take your chances? How do you go about that?
Yes, I kind of do think there's a blueprint to closers, and at least like in the 15 teamers, at least in the overall mindset, I feel like you really can't devote more than one early ish pick on a closer. You're just losing too much opportunity costs by doing that. If you want to take two closers, like in the top eight rounds, one, you know, they're so hit or miss year to year. I mean, it's very likely not, you know, one of, if not both the guys, you know, aren't the closer halfway through a season. But I just think from like a game theory perspective, it's like there's going to be teams out there that hit on the Clases, that hit on these closers going late. If you're wasting or if you're investing two top eight round picks on foot, you're behind that eight ball. You're behind those teams that hit on those closers late. So to me, it's like I'm going to hit. I'm fine drafting, you know, a top 70 closer, you know, in the top 10 rounds, just secure that one guy. But after that, I'm going spec closers. You know, I'll draft three, four guys, you know, around 15 plus. I don't want to devote more than one, you know, premium draft pick on a closer, essentially. Especially in this climate where, you know, closers are so fickle. You know, they're doing a lot of committees, like you said earlier. It's like, yeah, I really don't think that's optimal strategy to go more than maybe one closer in the top 10 rounds.
Yeah, and these DC formats, I've like started to see the appeal if you wanted to, because you just lock in your saves and don't have to play with it again. Given if the guy falls, that you're just in trouble again.
Yeah,
I get it there. In a redraft format, I've always been, get me one of my top like seven or eight, and then I'm going to move on. Like last year, I was getting a ton of Iglesias or like Kenley Jansen's or whatever, kind of the back end of those seven or eight. And then I just go and piece it together later. And it was okay. It worked out. So, invest that many. It's tough.
And the overall component, I mean, it plays a factor in here, right? Because you're competing against all these hundreds and thousands of other teams. You kind of have to hit it right in a draft. And, you know, if you're investing too much in closers, there's other teams that aren't. And there's other teams that are going to hit on guys that you're not going to hit on. Yep. So, to me, it's – and especially, like I said, in this climate now, it's such a fickle position. You know, I'm not a gambling on more than one guy in the top eight, nine, 10 rounds.
Yeah, and with like even the starting pitching landscape, it's so deep now because there's not as many guys going deep in games. So you get this bigger pool of like five, six inning guys that are usable or kind of better than streamable potentially. And so now you can get more offense early, get a close. Like, you don't have to go super crazy. Like, you can. Like, do you go – like, I know Toby's Mr. Pocket Aces. I've seen the appeal to it. I also see the appeal to waiting, especially a year like this year. How do you approach starting pitching in a draft?
Yeah, so I was doing the Aces before it became cool, the Pocket Aces.
the original Pocket Aces.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, yeah, before Toby coined that. To me, it was, especially in the 12-teamers, that was always, like, the most optimal strategy. Just because
you can almost stop drafting starting pitching for so long after that.
Well, yeah, plus in the 12-teamers, you could build an offense so much easier that, true, to me, it was crazy not to draft those horses right at the top, right? You're getting clutch big bats in rounds 9, 10, 11. You know, I want to secure those top-end aces to go along with that offense. So, to me, it's even more imperative in the 12-teamers to build that starting pitching base early and just load up on the bats after that. You could still – that's how my OC that finished fourth, I started out DeGrom Bauer there, which is funny because the one thing I trailed in at the end was ratio. So, you know, if I had them the whole year, I feel like I would have had a good chance to take that tournament. But I still was able to build like a massive offense, you know, forfeiting top two picks on pitchers. So it's just a different animal, I think, the 12 teamers and that. You can find bats almost throughout the entire draft.
Let's take a quick a break from this episode of Bench with Bubba, and I want to talk to you about Fantrax.com. Phenomenal way to play fantasy baseball. If you're new to Fantrax, you want to try it out. Like, if you have leagues on other platforms that maybe you're frustrated with this and that, come over to Fantrax. It's free. Come check it out. Free premium, especially when you bring your old league over. You just show them your format. Boom. They set it up for you. Absolutely awesome stuff. It is a great format. It has fully customizable, whatever you want, all the craziness. You can even have your leagues pay their fees right there. They'll hold the cash for you. Simple as that. So much fun over there at Fantrax.com. Deepest player pools. If you're into Dynasty, you want to be on Fantrax.com. It's absolutely great. So if you're new to Fantrax.com, use Fantrax.com/Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for a first-time sign-up. They'll get you all hooked up right there. If you have any questions, just hit me up. I'll set you up with the people. We'll get it taken care of. They are a great platform to play fantasy baseball. Hey, even fantasy football, basketball, college, NASCAR, golf. They have it all, people. Everything you want for your season-long sports, Fantrax.com. If you're new, Fantrax.com/Bubba. And even better, folks, you like Fernando Tatis Jr.? You should. Bad shoulder or not, you should like him because regardless of the shoulder, he can sign a baseball. If you're new to Fantrax.com and use Fantrax.com/Bubba, then use promo code Tatis, T-A-T-I-S. You're entered to win a free autograph, Fernando Tatis Jr. baseball. You're going to love it. Go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and get in, get action, play some Fantrax this year. You know, this is why I'm really enjoying this discussion because like people know, I record Toby once a week and a lot of it's 15-team base because that's what he focuses on. I like to play 12s a lot. So it's really nice to hear your kind of viewpoint on it, which makes sense to me as well. Is I think it's for the more common player. I think 12 is much better, obviously. I think it's common sense. You don't really need to listen to this for that. But the way you're saying it, like you can build this really awesome team and still be okay, where 15-teamers, like we've said already a few times, you can just be so lost in the weeds if you miss a pick or two. And it just really skews things up. So if you're just kind of common average player or just trying to get your feet wet in like NFBC, don't jump into the 15-team pool. Like, get used to this system. It's so much better. I like that you can, because even like the waiver wire, I got Votto last year. I got Jazz Chisholm in a league last year. Like, you can find guys that are out there that'll help you out a ton. So I like that quite a bit. What else went right for you last year? You had Clase, you had Vladito. Obviously, like we said, it's a long season. You got to have more than just that to win a league. So what was it? Was it a strategy you implied? Was it hitting big on certain things? What went right for you?
Well, offensively, I would say I targeted not just Vlad, like all the Blue Jays. I had Bichette, Teoscar, Vlad, Kupchyk late also. I mean, it's funny. I mentioned this before, like stacking is not really a thing in baseball, but that big team I had was stacked with Blue Jays. I just thought they were all going, you know.
They had like five or six guys in the top 10 on the Razzball Player Rater. They were insane last year.
Plus, you know, weren't they playing in Dunedin to begin the year there too? I mean, that's just a launching pad.
Bandbacks, yeah.
Yeah, and they were all going super low. Teoscar, I think, it was like eighth, ninth round or something. It was ridiculous. But Julio Urias was another main piece. That was another guy. That was one of the guys I was going and targeting. I just saw, you know, people were very concerned about his innings.
Yeah, I'm guilty. I'm guilty of that. Yeah. I was so wrong on that one.
Yeah, and to me, it was just like, okay, the only thing preventing him from hitting that ace, that top-tier pitcher, is innings, right? His stuff's electric. He's on a team that's going to win 100-plus games. You know, if he can get 150-plus innings, you're getting, you know, an SP1, SP2 at worst, probably. And sure enough, he even outproduced those numbers. But, yeah, I was targeting him, and I just thought the market was too low, and that fear, innings fear, was taking him way too low in drafts. So I was happy to jump him a little bit there.
Yeah, I like that a lot. He's a guy, and I'm even confused on him now this year because he threw so many innings last year, such a bump from the year before.
Yeah.
It's like, man, like, the dude's awesome. Like, he's really good, but what do they do with them? I'm so lost. Like, they let Walker Buehler run. And this is where I'm messed up in the head mentally for fantasy is I've always believed they'll let Walker Buehler run. I was always worried about Urias. Now it's like, will they just let Urias do what Buehler did? Or do they bring him back? It's like, it's so tough. But
it's funny, too, when you talk about, like, Vlad and Urias now. It's like somebody asked me before, like, Vlad was amazing for you. Are you going to own much of him this year? I'm like, probably not.
No.
At all. Because he's going, what, top five, top six?
And yeah.
To me, I'm trying to find the next Vlad in round 4 and 5. Yeah. I want Vlad at number 5 overall.
And that's the key. That's the key is because the reason, like you said, you got Vlad, you got Urias. The reason why I got Stroman last year and other guys is you're looking at the misprices of guys, basically.
Yeah.
Now they could be like what I was saying with O'Neill, maybe a bit overpriced. And so now it's like, do I really want to do that or do I not? Like the Teoscar is a great example. He had that monster of 2020, but people were like, oh, short season, this and that. So he still went around 8 or 9. He backed it up. Now he's up to like round 3 for the most part now.
Yep.
Maybe round 2. So it's like, do I take that price on Teoscar, even though I just got, like, it's just, you have to weigh these things out, and now you got to find that next guy, like you're saying. That's where it gets fun and trying to figure it out, and that's where you can win these leagues, because everybody can go, oh, yeah, Vlad's a top 5 pick now. Okay, cool.
Right.
But who's the next Vlad, as you said? That's exactly. That's yeah. The challenging part to make it work. You got to
find those small edges in these draft rooms, that's all.
How, without giving away all your secret sauce, how do you go looking into finding those small edges?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I see, I mean, I try to look at the previous year too, and guys coming off down years. And if it's injury, I look at age a lot too. And, you know, if there were injuries that were impacting the player's performance, obviously, like Zach Gallen's a guy who I'm pretty high on this year.
Yeah.
And the market's super low. I think he's going like in the 130s, 140s. Yeah. I mean, this guy's 1 year removed from being a third round pick.
Yep.
He had the arm issue. Yeah, I think, knock on wood, everything should be good going into.
It's just a weird set of injuries last year. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, but he had the two, you know, monster seasons, yep, rookie year, and he followed it up. So I mean, that's a guy that can easily go back. He could revert back to that form, mm-hmm, and you're getting a ridiculous discount. So those are the guys I'm looking at and just trying to find that value. In drafts, Kelvin Nick's another guy which I'm super high on.
Yeah.
Mostly the market's down on, but he has a profile that I love, especially in his overall tournaments. That speed, the power, the pedigree. He's got a depressed value right now, somewhat. You know, he's going, what, 130, 140 ish around there.
Yep.
And to me, that's a guy that can easily be a top 15 outfielder in fantasy.
Big time.
You look back next June, July, you'd be like, holy crap, I got this guy in round 12, like, and he's a monster. I mean, it takes time for some of these young guys to adjust to major league.
He finished the season pretty good. Like, he started to figure things out a little bit, which was good to see.
And he went through like a really rough stretch there. Like, 2 months, he was just terrible. I know, because, you know, he was on a couple of my teams, but, and plus I'm a Mets fan, so I use that too as another reason for him to just go to the moon. Somehow become win the batting title or become a perennial all-star now. But no, I love that kid. I love his game. I think he's got a lot of moxie, and I see big things for him this year. So that'll be good. I probably won't get him in any leagues now that I keep, you know, touting his name on all these pods. But yeah.
The thing we all know with Kelenic, because it is funny, like, he's a perfect example of last year, he never even really played in the bigs, and everybody was just drooling of, when can I draft Jared Kelenic? And now it's like they saw him play. And even though he finished pretty strong, like, I'm confident, I'm in your camp where it's like, I like the improvements I saw. He's young, but the talent's ridiculous. Like, he showed me improvements. Like, another guy I'm big on that's going super late, like really late right now, and I might be crazy for it, but I believe the pedigree, is Joe Adell. I might be crazy for that. He's going super late, and no one's talking about him. I think I've had him in every 50 I've done so far. Like, I just keep grabbing him as like my eighth outfielder. Like, no one's drafting him. I could be wrong, but he's basically free. So it's those kind of guys where everyone's drooling about him 1 year. They have a rough go. God forbid, you know, a 23-year-old struggles in professional baseball with, especially 2020, didn't have a minor league season. Like, let's look at the whole picture here. And then, so Klenik's a great example. The thing I was going to say, though, it's funny, and you know it too. You better draft him in like February, because once he gets that first spring training home run,
That's a guy that's going to shoot up boards. I know that, but just odd seeing how low some of these guys are going right now. But it's definitely a guy I'll be targeting.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting ones there. You know, we talked about guys like that. What about positional scarcity? Like, everybody talks about third base. It's dreadful. Do you make a point to push up your interest to get a guy like him, or like a third baseman early, or do you say, screw it, I know my positions, I'm gonna draft these best available, blah blah blah, and go get that?
I don't look at this scarcity too much. I mean, it's, to me, if I don't see a huge drop off, let's say there's like 9 or 10 third baseman I like, you know, I'm content waiting for that 8th, 9th, 10th one to fall into my lap at some point. I'm not going to reach for, you know, the 3rd or 4th one if I don't see much of a disparity between those players. So I'm fine playing that waiting game. You know, I don't want to wait too long. I don't want to be starting, you know, a guy not even getting everyday at bats or something at third base, or like a corner, you know, it's better used as a corner as my starting third baseman. So I do want to kind of, you know, to get that last of the tier, if you will. Because, it is kind of a gross position this year. I was looking over that earlier. It's after tough, 9 or 10, it kind of falls off the cliff there at third base. So, Now, I'll definitely try to get one of those. I just don't really care which one it is, you know, if I don't love anyone in particular.
And that's kind of what I've been trying to do in these early drafts, is I saw myself getting too aggressive, I felt, on Devers, because I really want stolen bases. I'm taking a guy early. He doesn't give them to me, but I know I can get stolen bases later. But then it kind of like already dictates your draft right out the gate, which is not always fun. But at the same time, you don't want to play roulette, Russian roulette, and be like, oh no, like this is going to suck here in a minute. So
with speed. I'm always conscious of the speed factor early in drafts. I'm not usually taking a guy that doesn't offer me at least something in stolen bases. So, third base is a tricky one this year too. With Mondesi also, it's like, where's he gonna go?
Where do you stand on a guy like Mondesi? Because God, dude, like, I'm so intrigued by him, because we know even in 100 games he could basically potentially win you a league, and then you get to replace him with someone later. But it's still like, you got to play that pick and pray he plays at least 100 games. And that's the question mark. We didn't see it last year. Could easily see it this year. And he's going around, I think, like round 3 right now, give or take. So where do you sit on a guy like that?
It's still pricey, though, to me.
That's the problem. You got to pay a price to get him.
And you don't, you know, it's nice to get those 50 steals, but you don't need them to win these overalls. You know, you just got to be competitive in those categories. I think that's a common misconception where, you know, I need 100 steals, 120 steals. No, you don't. You just need to be in that 88th percentile. You need to be competitive. You need to be, you know, the top 3 or 4 in your league. And then overall in that top, you know, 80%. So you don't need, I do love him as a player, and it sucks that he's always hurt. I would definitely take him if the price dictated that, but it's not a guy that I'm reaching for where I have in the past, and he's burned me a couple of times. But if he falls into a place where in 3rd, 4th round, I would definitely consider it. Yeah. 3rd is probably a little too early for me still. Fourth, I'd be hard pressed to not take him there.
So I think he's
like
better.
You said too, you can replace, you know, those games he misses, you're not getting zero production. You're able to replace that.
Like, you could fill it in with as bad as he was, like an Alec Baum or a Carter Kieban. If worse comes to worse, like, you got a body you can put out there type situation.
Right.
Or go draft Hunter Dozier, because maybe he'll play 3rd if Mondesi's down or something. And he plays whatever the outfield also.
Whatever you get from Monacy and your replacement is still going to be a monster awesome. Stat line into the year, right? So you just got to hope Monacy can play half the season at least.
Exactly. It feels like he might be better fit for like a 12-teamer than a 15 because of the replacement value you can get. 15 might stress you out a little more. really put a stress on your team, where the 12, you can play that flexibility card. I think he's also really good in those DC formats because you're already drafting two or three other third basemans. You're not worried about it. So it's like, hey, run out there when I can run you out there. Otherwise, I'm going to bring you in. So much easier that way. Not the stress of having to add and drop and do all that kind of stuff. What are you doing with depth of pitching this year? We already said you like to take the aces early, but like it's insanely deep. Like I'm doing a 50 right now. I'm in around 40, and there's still guys out there. I'm like, I wouldn't. We stream them all the time. Like it's a deep pool right now.
Yeah, I think it is a deep pool. Is it the question I have too? And I think everyone else will. It's just the amount of innings. Like how many of these horses are going to give you now? I think the number is like 180, or it used to be 200, right? How many guys can actually give you 180 innings pitched? And I still value those guys more so than any, the middle, way more than the middle tier pitchers. But I still think you need a couple of those horses in this thing to win the overalls. They just provide that huge base. And if you do get the 200 inning year, which is like a unicorn now, I mean, I feel like you're ahead of the eight ball there. So I do like, investing in premium pitching early for sure. You know, take a break, bang out those bats, and then I'll attack that pitching again in those middle rounds. And then you hopefully find a Stroman's and a couple aces, the Urias, those guys.
Urias is clutch.
You want to find the aces also in rounds 8 through, 12.
That's big. Really, the guys that found the Robbie Rays last year and those guys.
Exactly,
that's insane. And you're not going to find a Cy Young Award winner every time. That's not going to happen. But yeah, like you said, the aces, even a professional team's SP2 could be an ace for your fantasy team. So those type of nuggets.
We see guys. It's not like, we see guys come out of nowhere and have these huge ace-like seasons. So, it happens. You just got to be on the right guys. So to me, that's always my plan is going into drafts. We know that the known commodities up top, the Groms, Scherzers, those guys. It's hitting on the Robbie Rays. Those are the guys that really
that's how you win leagues.
Teams and the overalls.
Speaking of a couple guys, they're not on the outline, but you mentioned one of them for sure. And you as a Mets fan, I want to get your thoughts on this. Jacob DeGrom. I know the ideal answer is we need to know more. That's the ideal answer. Like what is going on there? I want to see him throw a few times, type thing. Ideally, that's what it is. But in this crazy world we live in, we're drafting. Now. So what are you doing? Say you start drafting in January, football season's over. You're going to start dipping your toe in the water. How are you approaching the Grumman drafts?
Wow. Yeah. See, I still can't pass on him anywhere in the second round. I don't even know where he's going.
For the most part, he's back end of one. Sometimes I've seen him fall into two. I can't do it. I pass by him every time. I love DeGrom. You know it. I know it. If he is DeGrom, he wins your league. That's what he does. But that's a waste of a pick if it doesn't happen.
It is. I'm always looking at what could happen, really.
Yeah, and see, that's a good philosophy because there's so many cautious drafters out there. I'm guilty of it a lot. The what if, that's how you win overalls, at least. You got to go for the – I'm a DFS guy, so to me the overall is a GPP. You got to take your chances. Look for the ceiling, so I got you.
That's how I attack, these drafts, too, is I'm always conscious of that overall component. I'm always tracking those categories weekly. What is the overall category? Where am I trailing? What do I need to hit every week? So I'm making those adjustments. But I'm looking at ceiling mostly first. Obviously, you can't draft a bunch of injury risks and wild cards throughout your draft. You have to have that nucleus of guys that are give you those counting stats and the innings and whatnot. But to me, Jake is so far and away the best pitcher in baseball, assuming his arm's intact, and from all accounts, it is, from the GM and Stan Gulbjerson, came out and said his UCL is fully intact. If we see him throwing 99 in March, he's going to be another top 8-9 pick again. And if it's me in the draft, I'm not going to bet on injury. I know there's drafters out there that are super paranoid about that, and I'll avoid them at all costs. That's not me. I'll take that chance that he's Jake DeGrom. He gives me 100 and gives me 160 innings, he easily a first round pick. He
gets well, especially
180-200. He's number one overall.
Okay, he still finished. Wasn't he still a top 10 guy last year, even though he missed like the last 2 months or something?
I mean, it's so crazy how good he is. It's just a rare. He's just a rare player to me. This is not your typical ace, you know, where you know you're just taking this stupid risk on. I mean, you know, he's a generational pitcher here. That you know, if you hit on him, you know,
you put him with Scherzer. Could be fun. Could be fun. Another guy that struggled tremendously last year, though, like we kind of mentioned, the Bellinger of hitters. For pitchers, just I've been torn on him. I've been wanting to take him. I took him, I think, in one league so far because he's going super late. But we know what he's done for the previous 6-7 years. What are you doing with Kyle Hendricks? It was so bad last year.
Yeah, I'm never on the Kyle Hendricks train. So that last year just only furthered that stance. But if you're not getting strikeouts, I know I can't just depend on ratios. True. I need that strikeout base. You know, we've seen outlier years where, you know, guys have great ratio years. You don't really see outlier years where the Hendricks have great strikeout, you know, K years. True. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just too dependent on ratios. I'd rather just pass, you know.
Yep. It's a good point.
I don't really like any pitchers that don't provide that strikeout base.
What when you're talking strikeout base, because strikeouts are ridiculous, I get it, because that's it, they're not as often as they used to, they aren't throwing as many innings anymore. Right. So those elite strikeout guys are elite. Do you have like a threshold, like a K percentage, a K to walk percentage, a K per nine, like that you look for when you're drafting, when you look at your stats, like I want guys over this amount, like that I'm trying to focus on?
Yeah, I mean, usually at least a strikeout per inning, like anyone under that, I'm not too keen on. Obviously, you can't get a whole staff with strikeout guys like that. But yeah, if I'm going to invest in any pitcher with a, you know, decent pick, you know, top 10 rounds, give or take, they need to be somewhat strikeout artists, or at least have some sort of a ceiling there. And that's why I'm never on Hendricks.
Yeah. No, it's tough. Like the reason why I liked Hendricks at first is because he's an innings eater and he can get you, you know, this, that, and the other ratios. But strikeouts aren't there, and last year was dreadful. I luckily somehow missed him last year in most drafts. I think it's because I was literally saying, if you want Hendricks, just wait and draft Stroman. Like that was my theory. Yeah, if you exactly. want,
that's yeah, that like, was my just wait too. It's like he's basically Hendricks going 3 or 4 rounds later.
Yeah, that was my discussion every time. Yeah, 100%. And I like to do that with drafts. Like I don't know if you're a Baseball HQ guy with the forecaster or not. But I think they have the Mayberry method, which I think is amazing because it'll show you guys that are similar to the player you're looking at. And it's like, oh, wait, I can rate 7 rounds and get this similar production and get something else. I think it's a great way to think when you're drafting to kind of look for plans A, like B, and C in case things don't go well. And it helps out a ton. The other thing I want to ask you about pitching, sticky stuff. We saw how crazy that was last year. We saw some of the big guys rebound towards the end of last year, which I'm a believer they can still pitch. I'm not stupid. Or they're going to find the next best thing. That's what they're going to do too. Baseball's talks about bringing the universal sticky ball like they use in the Olympics and stuff, which guys like Joe Ryan just raved about. So it's freaking amazing. So we don't know all the details. But are you factoring any of these guys that saw massive decreases in sticky stuff? Are you trying to buy them as bounce backs? Or are you just kind of like worried about them? What are your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I honestly, I don't concern myself too much. Garrett Cole is like the main culprit of that too, and I don't know where he's going even these days in drafts. But
he's mid to late round one.
Is he still going high?
He's usually the top pitcher off the board.
Wow.
Him and Scherzer battle back and forth for top pitcher.
Okay, off the board. Yeah, I'll have zero Garrett Cole then this year because I do think he was impacted by that. Greatly. I think the numbers bear that out also. Yeah. So that's shocking to me. He's still going as the number one or two pitcher off the board. He's the one guy that I would probably avoid in drafts. I think he had like a 4 ERA. I think once that post sticky stuff,
he had a rough go. Timeline, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, his numbers clearly dropped off. Bauer's another guy, which we don't know if we'll even see him. I don't know what his status is.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
That's not a guy that I'll be targeting either, but those are probably the big two that I'll just find other options for.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting ones to look at there, but maybe they figure that out and before next season. The other thing to figure out is the universal DH, which I'm pretty sure I think most of us think is going to happen. If we see baseball next year, which I still believe we'll see the normal season, we're going to get a DH everywhere, which is about dang time. Will that affect how you focus on drafts? Because it obviously opens up potentially more bats, even though I'm still a firm believer that not every team will have a designated DH. It'll be used as like a rest day situation, but will this affect some players for you potentially drafting?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a few players here who are blocked or whatever, like a Dominic Smith comes to mind, even though he was pretty terrible last year. But I mean, that's a guy that would clearly benefit from a DH. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it holds too much. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head any big bats that were kind of, you know, blocked, whether position in the NL or whatnot. But yeah, I don't think it'll be too much of an impact overall.
Yeah, maybe if anything, it's more on the pitcher side. National League pitchers get a little bit of a downgrade. Potentially, like I know Rob Silver and others have actually done the math behind it, and I just like to talk about it and show numbers that it makes sense. It's like, to me, it's not astronomically different, but it definitely brings more of a guy into a tier type situation to mix and match, to get at least early on in drafts, I'd say. It's more of a deciding factor potentially. So that's something to monitor as well. But it'll be interesting. You mentioned, I meant to bring it up earlier. So you mentioned no stacking in baseball with Toronto. And it's so funny because usually you don't in season long. You had Toronto. I know, I believe it was Casey Cha was going like all reds. And he like was dominating with that. And it makes sense. Great American Small Park. They're going to crush. Right. We know we can talk about pitching. The AL Central, focus on some of those pitchers because that division's so bad. I think I'm paying attention to it a little more than usual. I'm not focused on it at all. It's not a game plan going into it. But can you foresee yourself maybe doing something again? I know maybe not Toronto per se, but looking at a situation and going, I want to attack that again this year because it worked so well last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think even on the pitching side too, even like the DeGrom, Scherzer, you know, and the Dodgers guys too, I like attacking those good teams and good parks, right? With you're going to get wins, you're going to get the strikeouts, you're going to get the rate. I mean, to me, it's so easy, you know, to foresee just a huge, you know, pitching staff if you just find those right spots. As far as the hitting goes, yeah, I haven't dug in too much on that too. And I guess once I see more, get into the ADP more and see kind of where the values are in the market, and maybe that may change my mind a little bit. But yeah, off the top of my head, no, I don't have any at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as the ADP keeps changing, because it's already changed a bunch in like the last month as people are drafting more. Obviously,
people draft DCs in November, and I was messing with Zach on that. I'm like, you got like,
it. That's why I just
fish
do the fifth.
Fish did like 15 drafts or something. I saw.
It's crazy. Like, I was giving Fish such a hard time when he was on a few weeks ago. I'm like, you're freaking crazy, dude. Like, you're freaking ridiculous. Like, I love draft. That's why I do the 50s, or I'll do some cheaper, like, best balls somewhere just to keep my brain moving on getting the player pools. But I'm not investing big money right now. This is freaking crazy, man. Obviously, you can win. Like, Zach even, he tweeted out some charts. You can win any time of the year. Yeah. Obviously true. I'm not comfortable with it. That's all I know. So,
if you're not comfortable drafting... And those DCs, we barely know, you know, in February what some of these rosters will look like, you know. So doing it in November is just wild. But hey, you get some crazy values now too. So
that's the kicker. Is like, you can get some serious values, but you can also get some serious duds. Like, I had at least one player on every roster last year that I drafted before January that didn't even make a team. So it's a weird deal. It's a very, very weird deal.
Yeah.
Before we wrap this up, question for you. You had such success in 2021. There's goods, there's bads. You learned all, we learn every year we do stuff. So you got all that. With the changes coming in 2022 and everything, what strategies or lessons learned from 2021 are you likely to do or not do in 2022?
It's funny. I've been asked this question before too. And the answer, you know, a lot of people they take it the wrong way, but I said, I'm not going to change too much from what I do, at least. I think my process kind of works what I do. I think maybe elements within my process, I might have to sharpen, you know, whether it's player analysis or, pitching depth, you know, and more into the metrics-based But to be honest, I listen to a lot of you guys to do the work for me, and then I just kind of soak up that information from you guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you know, I don't want to change something that's working for myself. I know that kind of sounds cocky or whatever, but
no, not at all.
But yeah, if it's been working for years, mm-hmm. and it's something I believe in, and I just continue to keep on doing it until I see different results, basically.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It makes total sense. Yeah. And it's not cocky to me. At least somebody that's been playing as long as I have and others should understand that. It's like, you've worked so hard on your system to get here. And it's not that you're going to go 100%. You said you're going to tweak it. You're going to do this, that, and you're adjustable in your drafts. But if people have listened to the conversation we've had, you've already said, like, you know, I look for this value here. Well, that's still learning and adjusting to situations. Yeah. So yeah. It's not like you're walking in going, nope, we're doing it this way. You have your strategy, which allows you to learn and adapt and do things. And that's very good, because there is logic for some to have like a strict, this is what we're doing. I get it. You got to stay disciplined. Otherwise you're going to go off the rails. That's how it works. But the way these drafts go these days, and you'll probably admit it, there's so many smart players now, like so many ridiculously smart players that are going to think the same thing you are on so many players. Like, you cannot walk in a room going, I'm going to get these 23 guys. That's just not going to happen. Like, no world is that ever going to happen. So you have to be able to adjust, and that's what you're saying with your deal. So it's not cocky to me. I totally get what you're saying, and it's working.
I think it's still in draft. Yeah, I think there's a certain feel that you have to have inside the draft room where you can kind of adjust on the fly, where I think a lot of owners, you know, they kind of, with that, you know, clock, that 60-second clock, you know, if a player gets sniped, you know, they don't know what to do. Their options to go, you know, they just, you know.
That 60-second clock, man. Yeah, I'd recommend for some people, if you're not comfortable in the 60-second clock, do a couple 60-second somethings beforehand, because it's going to shock you to your core real quick if you're not ready to adapt to that.
Yeah, and I just think, for me personally, I usually have a good sense of the draft room where, you know, I have a read on other owners, what they need. It's not only about what you need, you know, for your own team, but you got to be conscious of what the teams around you need. Yep. And I feel like that's kind of understated in current drafts.
That's a great point, because there's A, you know how certain people draft, so you can play that angle if you want. But B, use the roster grid on NFBC. Like, it's huge going, hey, this guy's got zero catchers. Or this guy's, like you said, even with your Vlad and Bellinger thing, well, this guy's not a first baseman. He's going to take, like, you knew that going in your head. Yeah. And that's part of the deal, because when it comes to KDS, this can be important when you're looking at this stuff. Do you prefer a certain section of the draft? Like, do you prefer the turn? So, you know, like, hey, I got two guys behind me. It'll help me with this pick, so I can see where they kind of need to go, type thing. Or do you want to be more like in the middle?
I think it depends really on my, between the 12 and the 15 teamers. I feel like the 15 teamers, you really don't want to be stuck on the ends there on the 14.
You can miss out on a lot.
Yeah, those runs. I mean, it's just a tough position to be in. Whereas in the 12 teamers, I honestly don't even care. Where you could draft a monster from any spot in that draft.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. It's been an awesome, awesome draft strategy talk. A lot of good, good information. I love the 12 team conversation, because I don't think it gets discussed enough. And it's a big difference between 15s and 12s. It is both doable, both fun, but they're different animals in a big, big way. So I appreciate the talk. And when do you plan on starting your drafting?
Yeah, I'm usually, I'm in prime time football mode right now until at least, you know, mid-January, whenever the seasons end. But once football ends, I go right into the baseball tank, and I'm drafting usually February into, you know, the season starts. So, but once I get down into baseball mode, I'm just crazy focused on that, and that's when it all begins.
Are you doing any lives, or are you doing them all online?
You know, I was thinking about doing, I haven't done the live ones yet. For football, I went out there, did that this year. It was fun. So, yeah, I might head out there to Vegas and try it out this year. We'll see. We'll see what the schedule looks like. You know, two kids and John.
I get it.
It's kind of tough at times. Yeah.
It's tough. Like, I love going to First Pitch Arizona. It's like, I can't do both. It's just not going to happen. So, I got pick your poison type thing. And you mentioned that the clock, or the 60-second clock. a 60-second live clock. Even more fun, people. So,
yeah, right? Even more fun. Yeah, no, so. I think it'd be fun. I know they do in New York, they do some live drafts too. Maybe I could check one of those out this year.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people go up there. I told we were talking with some guys in Arizona this year. They need to do more, like, not just the mains and the supers, do a couple like OCs and some other things. You'll get even more people there to like drag. Yeah, like, it'll turn into a big old deal.
Yeah. And I found too, yeah, it's definitely a different, you know, atmosphere. It's fun, you know, it's just seeing people, you're drafting them, you know, live. It's just a different feel completely. So I enjoy
it. It's awesome. It's definitely awesome. Well, what was awesome is I enjoyed chatting with you. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, Bob, real quick, I want to tell you, I've been a fan of yours since the early days, going back a few years now. So it's been nice seeing you kind of rise through the ranks. I feel like it's well-deserved, and you're definitely one of, you know, the better podcasters out there. So I appreciate you and Toby. So keep on doing a good job.
Well, I truly appreciate it. It means a lot to me because for a longest time, I didn't think anybody that actually played big-time fantasy gave a crap about this show, so I appreciate that.
I was listening to you like back in 18, I want to say. Like, it's been a few years.
Almost the beginning.
I wasn't quite in the beginning, maybe your second year doing it, but I started listening then, and I still listen to this day, so I appreciate it.
I truly appreciate it. I'm looking forward to having you on again sometime. We'll talk some more players and everything then, but I just – The discussion was great. I didn't even need to talk about the players too much this episode. It was great just talking strategy with you and getting ready. So we'll chat it up some more, maybe February. So let you get your feet wet in the baseball prep, and we'll talk some more players and whatnot. But it was a pleasure, and we'll do it again sometime. And good luck in the rest of your fantasy football season. Go get some more green. How's that sound?
There we go. Appreciate it, Bubba. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Everybody, go check him out on Twitter @_guilds, GILDZ. And make sure you follow the NFPC @the NFPC, not NFPC. You're going to want to do that too. So check all that stuff out. But this was Bench with Bubba, episode 422. Catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.